listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are. Welcome to another special episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. Today we are talking about the perennial argument in any household nowadays. It is screen time. Wendy, I don't know about you, but we have, if not tears, probably sweat. And no, not snot, but probably sweat most days talking about screen time and managing who's going to be logged on when, who isn't going to be logged on when, and why it's important that they don't be logged on all of the time.
We have tears. It's a really big deal for us getting my eldest off of a screen. She's very good at coming off of it, but then she's very bloody grumpy for a good half an hour afterwards.
I know. I do think it does something to their little teeny weeny brains, do you?
It really does. And so basically, listeners, you'll be very thrilled to hear that I'm going to be quiet in this podcast because I want to know everything our lovely guest has to say. And I'm going to shut up for once.
Well, not that I was going to say that's a good thing, but to be honest, it is a good thing that we listen up to today's guest because she is an expert on all things screen time. Please welcome Carolyn Bunting, who is the CEO of Internet Matters. Welcome, Carolyn.
Hi, good morning to both of you.
She's very relieved, everyone, that she's not going to have to sing on this podcast because it is a special. All we want to know is help, help, help. How can we get them off their screens? And when are we allowed to let them on their screens? So to start with, please tell us, what is Internet Matters?
Internet Matters is a not-for-profit organisation that's there to really help parents keep their children safe online and to make sure that they are thriving and they are happy and healthy online. So we provide parents with lots of great resources, advice, top tips and hints, how to set up parental controls, all of those interesting things that will help you as a parent make sure that your child's getting the best out of being online.
So let's go back a little bit first, Carolyn. First, I know you're a mum, which matters a huge amount to
us. It does matter because it means you really get it, don't you?
Yes.
But you've kind of worked your way up on some pretty spangly media giants. You've worked for Sky and Vodafone. How do you go on to become the CEO of Internet Matters? Is it, and I wondered if it's when you had kids you suddenly thought, oh crikey, this is really important. Or is there a slightly different route in?
Slightly different routine. So I was working at Sky, loved working at Sky. They were part of four organisations that got together back in 2014, the four big broadband companies. So there was BT, Sky, Virgin Media and TalkTalk. And the four of those, at the time that the political landscape and everything back then was about the ability for children to access adult content online far too easily. Yeah. And so there was a lot of pressure on the broadband companies to do something about that. And as part of that, they committed to creating what is now Internet Matters. And there was an opportunity to go and apply for the role to run the organisation. And I did. And I went through quite an interesting interview process with lots of CEOs in different places. And
sounds
I was delighted
terrifying.
To be able to get it. Yes, it was terrifying. I won't lie. And I've been there ever since. So I've been there now for 7 years. But I have to say, it is the best job I've ever had. I love what I do. I feel like, you know, if we can make a difference and keep just one child free from being harmed online, then it's worth all the hard work and the effort.
How old are your kids, Carolyn?
So I have twin boys who are...
You deserve a medal.
They will be 13 in September.
Oh, Christ. 13
years. Really at the coal face of internet things.
I am.
Wow. They must be amazing guinea pigs to like study and learn from.
They are, but they hate that I have this job.
Oh, I bet they do.
Because they feel like I constrain them too much. But the reality is I don't constrain them actually that much. It's just been something that as they've grown up as children, because I've been doing it since they were little, it's something that's been implicit every day, every other day we're talking about it, because that's what I do at work. So actually, you know, they actually have a fair bit of freedom online, to be fair.
So tell me, give me the screen and internet rules in your house.
So in our house, it's really interesting. So the way I approached it is when they were little, I set up all the sort of technical things that you can set up. So the parental controls on your broadband, the things like putting safe search onto Google so that they don't come across any inappropriate content, put restricted mode onto YouTube, which takes anything that's sort of more adult out of YouTube. So my approach was to set up those parental controls so that, because when they were little, most of what they were doing was browsing and engaging with content, that you were, you know, not 100%, because these things are never 100%, but you're pretty confident they're not seeing rubbishy stuff. Then we obviously talk about it an awful lot. And so we set up this sort of framework that if you want to look at anything new, or if you you want to open a new website or download a particular app, you have to come and ask and do that.
Okay, that's a good one.
And then the timing around it all. It's really interesting to hear your dilemma of getting your children off of their screens. I'm much more relaxed about that. I think,
Carolyn, we're doing it all wrong. It's a free-for-all in the Bunting house.
It's not a free-for-all. There are some rules around bedtime and meal times and homework and things like that. And obviously, but the thing is to think about it as in a balanced way, you know. If your children are, you know, happily going to school, happily making friends, happily, you know, having a broad set of interests and are physically active and are meeting their friends, doing all the usual things that children would do, you know, you've got to look at screen time as a balance in all of that mix. And then within the screen time itself is looking at what they're using the screen for, you know. For example, they're listening to music, or if they are researching for their homework, or if they've got a particular hobby that they're, you've got to look at the purpose of why they're using it. You know, clearly, if your child is sitting there and just mindlessly scrolling for hours on end, that's something to be worried about. But if they're using their devices to enhance their lives and their hobbies and, you know, stay connected with their friends, you've got to look at it as a kind of what's the purpose of why they're using the screen, rather than how long they're actually using it for. And so that's where...
Oh, God, I've got so many questions.
But should I tell you what? Already... anxiety levels in my tummy have gone down.
Yeah.
I feel like I can breathe a bit. Like, okay, it's okay. It's okay. Like, if they're doing it not in a crazy way, we're okay.
Yeah.
We're okay.
Yeah. And don't forget, children, you know... Children will do the things that they like doing, and they like, you know, it will, you know, I know we didn't, well, I certainly didn't have these gadgets and stuff when I was growing up, but crikey, if you could have watched your programme on TV over and over and over and again, you would have done, because that's just implicitly as a child, you're drawn to the things that you like doing. So I think we just have to, I think it's just important for parents to sort of nudge their children into the right balance. We talk about having a healthy digital diet, and you know, if you're on a screen because you're learning something new, or you're researching something, or you're being creative, or you know, all of that's good stuff. If you're communicating with your friends and family, terrific. It is that mindless scrolling where it's sort of what I would call sort of passive. You're not getting anything from it, you know. So if you're, you know, if you're spending 2 hours watching a TikTok feed, that's probably not the best use of your time. And that's absolutely when parents need to intervene. But try not to think of it as it's a set number of hours, because I just think you'll be fighting a losing battle.
That's really interesting.
So come on then, Wendy, you've got these questions burning inside you. Ask.
Christ, I don't know where to start. Okay, so you've made me feel better about the length of the screen time.
Yes.
As long as it's productive. But it's not often productive. It's often Minecraft. This is the problem.
But I see Minecraft as maths, Wend. No?
No, I'm liking this. Carolyn, talk to me.
Again, I think you know, there are many positive things about Minecraft in terms of the creativity. You know, my son plays Minecraft. He builds lots of flash looking houses that he wants yes. to live in with massive rooms.
So vets. There's lots of vets in my pet. Child's world.
So there's enormous creativity in Minecraft, and there is elements of teamwork in Minecraft as well.
Yes.
I wouldn't say, that just because they're spending hours playing Minecraft, that's necessarily bad. It comes back to balance and getting... the thing I would say is making sure that make sure they have healthy breaks from it. And I think like all children, yeah. if you kind of say you've been on that too long, you really need to take a break. And my strategy is like 10 minutes, take a break for 10 minutes. But then that 10 minutes usually turns into 20 or 30 because they then go and do something else and find something
that's
else to do.
That's very clever.
See, that's really good.
See, that's a yeah. brilliant tip.
So my daughter and her best friend were playing Minecraft. Yeah. And somebody random popped up in their world.
That's not cool.
Now, luckily, my daughter was on Minecraft with her best friend, who is a policeman's daughter, so is very right. good at all of this. So they just left the world and yep. came and told us. Yep. But that sort of stuff, if you'll pardon me, scares the shit out of me.
No, yeah, that's... I didn't... Okay, you freaked me out now because I didn't know that could happen. Carolyn...
Yes, look, there's no doubt that as
this is like
children,
a counselling session.
You're like an emergency service. You haven't given us your mobile, have you? Because we're going to be texting you about 18 times a day. Carolyn, something's happened.
What should I do?
Yeah, right. Sorry, I said I wouldn't interrupt.
No, it's fine. Look, it's inevitable that our children are going to be approached by people that they don't know online at some point, oh. right? Because whether they're playing particularly gaming, because gaming is now, it's so much online, real time, with messaging between participants and everything else, and particularly in gaming where children may game with people that they don't know, And on social media, you're going to get friends requests, even on email, you get spam email that kind of, is from, nice lady and wherever she is wants to meet you. So our children are always going to get these kind of requests. So that's why it's so important that from an early age, you start having those conversations mm. about the fact that that will happen. And the important thing is when it does happen, what do you do? And what a classic, brilliant example that you said there, that the girls just basically thought, that's a bit weird. I'm going to go and tell my mum or dad. And that's exactly what you want to happen.
Yeah, it's about encouraging them to speak up, isn't it?
Totally. And that, I also say to my children, you'll make mistakes, right? Because that's what children do. That's how children learn to make the right choices. It's how they build their resilience and their, so they will make mistakes. The role of us as parents is to make sure that we're there and that we don't judge them too much for making their mistakes. It's not their fault some random stranger jumped into Minecraft. They've got to know that you're not going to go mad or threaten to stop them playing or, that you're there to support them and you'll fix it together. And I think that's the goal that you want, because you're going to be fighting a losing battle if you want to try and create an environment where your child is never going to be approached by somebody they don't know online.
It's okay. A good life lesson, isn't it? That if something goes wrong, we learn from it and we adapt, like maybe adapt the parental controls on it or whatever the safety settings are, that we don't just throw the baby out with the bathwater and go, that's it, you're never playing Minecraft
ever
again.
Yes, and because the thing we always encourage parents to do is to not threaten to take the tech away, even when something really horrific happens. Because if you do, children won't come and talk to you about it, because the technology for them is often a lifeline. It's their digital playground. It's their access to their community. And so if you threaten to take the tech away, all they'll do is not tell you that something's going wrong, because they'll think, oh God, they're going to take my phone off me. If that's what happens every time something goes nearly a little bit wrong. So it's really important. The biggest part of our work is trying to encourage parents to have that interest and engagement with what their kids are doing online, to make sure they're taking the opportunities to talk about the scenarios that might happen and the risks they might encounter and then what they can do about it.
One of the things I say to mine, which always makes them laugh, but I hope it sows a seed of seriousness, is if ever anyone you don't know joins you online, like happened to Wendy's daughter, it's imagine it's likely to be an old man in his pants.
Yeah. And that's exactly
They're probably not another 9-year-old girl or boy. Yeah. And whenever I say that, they giggle and I'm like, no, seriously, how do you know who anyone is? And it does sow that thing of, I can't see them. I don't know who they are.
Absolutely. We talk about developing critical thinking skills, and it's really important that, again, and that applies to all aspects of the internet. You know, what you read on Wikipedia, is it true? Fake news, you know, all of that kind of thing. It is just encouraging children to think about who that might be, or is what I'm reading true? You know, can I verify it? Does it feel right? And it's that critical thinking that you're trying to get children to really deploy when they're online. And that comes through having conversations. It comes through exactly as you've done, of saying, do you know who that person might? You don't know who that person is. Could be this kind of person, could be that kind of person. Mm. And, and children don't want to come to harm at the end of the day. So if they know that and they've got that front of mind, they will just then say, I need to talk to you about this, and can you help me? And that's what you want. Because once they engage with you, you can then decide how you want to go about it and what you want to do about it.
So if the biggest danger to our kids isn't time spent online necessarily when it comes to the internet, what are the biggest dangers, Carolyn?
So there's lots of sort of traditional risks that parents talk to us about. So in particular, viewing inappropriate content, so whether that's violent content or pornography, the contact risk of being groomed, you know, and I think that's every parent's biggest fear, isn't it, that their child is going to be groomed. And then there's typically things like bullying online, and that again is something that can happen to quite a lot of children. And I think of, you know, in terms of sort of those risks, there are strategies that you can put in place, obviously, to try and minimize those risks. So the viewing of content, lots and lots of technical tools that you can put on. And I say technical, and that probably makes it sound really scary. It's not really. There's settings that you can deploy to basically...
But what if that's terrifying for you? What if you're a parent
who doesn't
know where to start?
Yeah, because it's kind of terrifying for me. I'm like, I'm the editor of a big website, and I'm scared of the settings, Carolyn.
So we've set out... One of the things that we've done is we have over 80 odd guides at Internet Matters for all of the popular networks, so the broadband networks, mobile phone networks, the social media networks, the gaming platforms, the games themselves, all of the things that children are most likely to use. You'll find a step-by-step guide at Internet Matters that will basically talk you through how you can set all of the controls. There are a lot of them, I think, and it doesn't make parents' lives any easier that, you know, there are a lot of them. But most of the big platforms that children are using, most of the games that children are using, because of a sort of more intense regulatory environment that we're getting in the UK, they are starting to really introduce lots and lots of controls and privacy settings and parental options to make sure that children are safe. So I would certainly encourage parents to do that. There's just lots of options that they can deploy. And the step-by-step guides and videos we've got online as well, if you're not into reading it, you can watch a video of how to set it. Just take the time to set those things up for the key things that your children are using.
Okay. We need to ask you about the dreaded social media, Carolyn.
I'm starting to worry about this. Are your boys on social?
Well, it depends what you call by social media. They're not creating content, user-generated content. But they are on WhatsApp. They have WhatsApp groups with their classmates. And I think that's I don't know whether that's because they're boys, that they're not into Instagram and Snapchat yet, because those are the other two big platforms.
Mm. Well,
they're
really TikTok into, as well.
Yeah. But even WhatsApp scares me. There's a lot of gangness on WhatsApp. It's all about forming groups and...
The challenge is the friendship groups and the understanding of the communication. So we've had a few instances where both sides of the fence, actually, where upset child because something's happened in the chat, you know, and you have to sit down and try and resolve that and talk it through. And we've had equally, I've had one of my children has upset someone else in a chat, you know. So again, you have to sit down and talk that through. But in many ways, that's not it's not the fault of the messaging platform. That's just what kids do.
That's life. That could have happened in the playground or on the bus.
I think the interesting thing, though, is what I speak to my boys about is just that the use of text and emojis, and particularly, oh my God, children text. It's even worse than adult short text that they have there. I mean, some of it you just don't get at all. And I'm going, what's that? That ability to interpret something differently, I think, is something we've talked about. That when you're face to face, you can see whether someone's joking. You can see you can see their body language and how they're feeling. Whereas when it's on text, it's very black and white. And obviously people can read things in different ways. So I've talked to my children about, you just need to realise it's a different medium. And so what you might be saying as a banter could come across to somebody else as upsetting. And likewise, what someone's written to you, they maybe didn't mean it quite in the way that they meant it. And again, that it is managing those friendship groups is quite difficult. But the best thing to do is to sit down and chat about it.
Can I ask a personal question? Sorry, I'm going to keep dragging your family into this.
No, it's all right.
How old were your boys when you gave them a phone? And was it one with the internet on it?
So I'm a single mum. So my boys trot off to their dads every other weekend, which is great. So dad was the first one to give them proper. They had iPads, first of all.
Right.
So that was, tablets were the first device. It all starts with Peppa Pig, doesn't it?
It does. You're so right.
Everything starts with Peppa.
Explain the demon pig.
So, you know, and they get the tablet and they watch one episode of Peppa, and then, frankly, as a parent, you realise there's 5,000 episodes of Peppa, and that makes life
half of you's quite pleased with that. Right, I can actually the future now. Brilliant.
And Daddy Pig is a twat in every single one of them. You just know. It's just the way it is.
Mine have come full circle now, watching the Peppa Pig that's overdubbed, you know, into comedy videos on YouTube, which is quite funny, but they're obviously a lot older. But they started on tablets, and so it was very content, as I say, all accessing content, lots of YouTube and so on. They then got into gaming. So it then became, we had Nintendo DSs and they've now moved on to Switches. And I think Nintendo is great for children. I think it's a really nice that the games, the consoles, they are really family friendly. And so I never really felt concerned about anything that they were doing on
those.
Good. They got a phone in the last year of primary school.
This is why I'm asking, because everyone debates, should you do it at the end of primary or beginning of secondary? And it's very stressful. Yeah,
they got a phone last year. They weren't the first, they weren't the last. And I think really the driver for me was we were trying to start, and clearly the pandemic had a massive impact on it. But that last year of year six is usually the time when children start practicing walking independently to school, perhaps, you know, because they might have to get on a coach in the future, or they might have to walk. And obviously they're getting older and it's not cool to be at the gate at secondary school with your mum and dad waiting for you, is it? So this independence comes in the last year of secondary school, that practicing. And so they actually got them for Christmas from their dad, bought them. Dad, a bit strange, he bought them iPhones, very fancy iPhones, which probably wouldn't have been my choice. I would have either given them a secondhand one, but they're internet connected. They're set up on sort of family sharing and so forth. So they've got controls on them. They switch off at bedtime.
And you can see what they're looking at.
Yeah, the screen time. Apple have a great, it's called screen time function, where you can set all the parental controls. So you can set even down to things like explicit music or not in the iTunes store. You can set, you know, ratings for the sites that you can see, so it will block sites automatically. So they're all set up with all of the controls again. And then we have an agreement that if you want to download an app, you have to come and tell me what app it is that you want to download, and I either say yes or no. And and I also have their passwords, so they also know that I pick up their phones and check them. I check their WhatsApp groups, I check their browsing histories, but they know I do that, so I don't do it secretly. We've agreed that up front, that that's part of the deal of having a phone. We work with Linda Papadopoulos, who's a psychologist, and she talks about privacy is earned, you know, that children need to demonstrate as they mature, they need to have their privacy. But you earn that privacy by showing you're responsible.
Trustworthy. Exactly.
Yeah, and you're trustworthy. So that's how we have them set up. And the reality is they use the phone to chat in their group chats, but that's about it. I'm phoning us to get a lift.
Yeah. But what about, I guess you said you've got boys, so
yes,
it's not.
Yes.
The social, the kind of social side of things is a bit different.
But Yeah.
My daughter is 9.
Yep.
And she has a mobile without a SIM card in, which is essentially used for playing Spotify on, so that she can
listen
to music and podcasts and rinse me for audible books every 3 minutes. But what, she's a Lego fiend and she discovered the Lego Life app.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it's basically where you design your little people and you post pictures of them.
Yeah.
But we found ourselves much earlier than we
thought.
That
was my doorbell. Sorry. If anyone heard that.
Right.
That's life. That's life.
We suddenly found ourselves having to have a conversation with a 9-year-old that was much earlier than I thought I was going to, about the importance of what other people think about what you post and why you're posting stuff, because she got really quite obsessed by putting up these pictures to get more likes. And I found myself having
the
likes conversation, which I knew was coming. I've got a daughter who's going to be a teenage daughter who's going to want to post stuff on Instagram or whatever platform it is by the time she's a teenager.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that, Carolyn, because it was a really big shock that I was suddenly talking about whether that kind of stuff with a 9-year-old.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the sort of reflections of society, isn't it? And the way it's changed so much from before digital really existed. When I was growing up as a teenager and you wanted to try out the new hairstyle or try out the new clothing, you did it in a world that was quite a supportive network of your friends and family. And therefore, if you got it wrong, and it's a sort of safe place to be able to do that. That the advent of social media is that you're just, there's this ability to share with the world and for the world to comment on you. And that is potentially quite damaging, for young people, because...
Well, for everybody on this podcast, my God, we've had so many people.
Number of parents we've had, famous, capable, talented, achieving, amazing people who are reduced to utter panic after people have...
And that's what I guess for me, I would be thinking about, the network that she's sharing with. There's nothing wrong with sharing and using the digital environment to share, but it's who you're sharing with and what you're sharing.
Well,
and
we've actually made her delete it, in honesty, because I decided she was too, if it was affecting her, that she was too young to be doing it.
I think that's a good point, Carolyn. We need to be explaining to them that sharing with your friends is one thing.
Yeah.
People who know you, love you, respect you, are going to be kind to you. But throwing yourself out into the wider world is a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
And I don't think children should be doing that. I don't think they're prepared for that. They don't have the emotional maturity. I mean, I don't have the emotional maturity out there and deal with it. I would find it, I am not a big social media person because I don't want the judgment, I just find that I don't have a thick enough skin to kind of deal with that judgment. So I think particularly for children, I think it's really important that with social media, you grow it really slowly. So, it's a safe profile and it's really sharing with just your very close friends and family. And then you grow that out as the maturity develops And also, I think it's about having those conversations that make sure, again, that they understand how society works. You understand that you know, everybody on social media posts all of the best things that are happening to them, right? No one's ever having a bad day, or very few people are having a bad day. They live perfect lives with perfect bodies, perfect faces, perfect hair, perfect makeup. But you know, behind that is a whole heap of photo manipulation, is a whole heap of, you know, stylists and makeup, and it's not real, you know? So I think it's important that we talk to children about what's real and what's, you know, been edited, adjusted, created, you know, for what is in essence often commercial reasons, you know, whether that's to get sponsorship deals or plug products or whatever it is. So again, teaching children to think critically about what they're seeing online is really important. And then, as you know, obviously, as you talked about, and think about what they're sharing and what it says about them online. Obviously, for young people, you know, you want them to share safely. So, you know, thinking about not posting anything that's going to be embarrassing or, you know, give away too much about their identity or whatever. Those things are really important to think about as well.
Sorry, I've got so many questions like you, Wendy. Can I jump in with one more and then it's your turn, Wendy? What effect do you think the pandemic's had on our children's internet usage?
We did, we research with parents on a regular basis. We do it every 3 or 4 months. And so we were in a privileged position to have done the research both before, during and after the pandemic. And a few real highlights came out of that for us. Overall, for most children, we saw marginal changes in sort of their experience of online risk and harm. And generally speaking, parents felt that the internet during the pandemic really helped, you know, because of education and because of keeping their kids entertained. They did say that they felt at the end of the pandemic that their children were over-reliant on the tech. And I think that is one of the things that, you know, once everyone was on it, it's hard to claw it back. And we probably have a few, the sort of the top end of primary that probably were thrust into it a bit prematurely because it was the only way of keeping engaged with their friends and with their family. Yeah. But the big thing that we saw, and we do a lot of work in this space, is that it was children that have vulnerabilities that actually had a much harder time. So if your child has got SEND, you know, or is a young carer, or has got an eating disorder or mental health issues, those children, we saw quite significant increases in their experience of risk and harm during the pandemic. And that's aligns to much of the research that we see, and that is that online harms isn't spread proportionately amongst children,
but
whilst every child
be
can be
there?
At risk. I think it's because their cognitive ability and their emotional ability to understand what is going on is sometimes lacking. You okay. know, if you've got autism or if you're, you know, got mental health issues where you're, you know, depressed or isolated or whatever, those children are much more prone to being potentially exploited and to build, you know, relationships with people online where obviously someone's being a bad actor. And they are also, you know, you get into the sort of, they see much more exposure to sites that talk about suicide or sites that talk about pro-anorexia just because they are they're a vulnerable cohort in society. And they're, you know, you want to believe that every child has a wonderful parent that is putting their needs and their care and their safety front and centre of everything that they do. But sadly, not all parents are like that. And so there is a cohort of young people that are particularly vulnerable and they fared worse in the pandemic.
That's really sad.
So what, I don't know if there is just one thing, Carolyn, but if you could do a loudspeaker announcement to every parent in the UK, think of the old hear ye, what would you say that we all must do to keep our children safer online? And actually, also, if you could get the government to do one thing,
ooh,
what would it be?
Good question, Wendell.
So the government, so I'll do the government thing first. The government are doing a bit more, but it's so slow. It needs to go much, much, much quicker. There's no regulation at the moment. There's no regulation. There's a little bit of regulation of the internet at the moment. But if you think about your TV, you know, there's a watershed, there's a, you know, the license is dependent on organisations broadcasting curated, regulated, appropriate content that is good content. There is nothing in this space to hold this, the internet companies to account. So the government are introducing something called the Online Safety Bill, which is going to be the first step in. They've appointed Ofcom as the regulator, a new regulator for the internet. And it's basic level, they will be legally obliged to fulfil their terms and conditions. So things like not having bullying on their platform or not sharing, you know, illegal content like terrorism and all the rest of it, and they can be fined and all of that if they don't. So there is regulation coming, but it's very slow. It's unlikely to really be here before 2024 before it takes effect.
Such a long time.
So the government, you know, we need them to do more and just, you know, make sure that the you know, that the internet is a safe place for our children to be. You know, we can't turn the clock back and rewind it, but what we can do is make sure, in the same way that we put, you know, when you buy a toy, it has to meet certain standards, you know.
Yeah, you look for the kite mark.
You look for the kite mark, you know. So we need to make sure that the internet for our young people is a place where they can thrive and they can get all the benefits from it, because we know the outcomes are better if they do. You know, but that they're safe. And that is an obligation that the government have. If there was one thing I would tell parents to do in the interim, I think my biggest thing is be nosy. I think if you're nosy.
Wendy and I will be fine then, won't we, Wendy? Off we go. Poking around in business that's not ours.
Yeah. And I think just, you know, engage in your children. You know, your children don't view the phone as something that is their life. That, you know, it is their life, but you have a right to be, as a parent, engaged in their life. So ask them what they're doing. You know, if they're using an app that you don't know about, download the app, go and find out what it's like, go and work out for yourself what the risks are, and then maybe have the conversation. So I would just say be engaged and use every opportunity that you can to talk to them about critical thinking, to talk to them about what they might see and find on the internet, and to build that open, trusting relationship that they can come and talk to you if they ever find themselves in trouble, because that's the key.
I think this is really interesting. Just a final kind of summarizing note. It's all really about communicating with your kids, isn't it? Which is ultimately what anything's about when it's being a parent. I've worked on campaigns to do with protecting children from sexual abuse, and in fact all of the advice you give is the same, which is have a relationship with your kids where they know they can come and talk to you about anything. That's the best way to protect them from anything, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, start young and just keep that dialogue going, keep that trust going. You know, as I say, don't threaten to take away the devices. You want to create an environment.
I think that's a really key takeout from today, which makes absolute sense, but it didn't until you said it.
Yeah.
But and also don't stress about the time.
I wouldn't stress about the time. I don't stress about time, because I just think if I stress about time, I'll be having an argument with everybody every day. And that is it's a battle I can't fight. I think the more important thing for me was that they understood why I was worried about them, and that they knew what to do, and we agreed certain things that we would do, you know, in certain scenarios. And that's like anything. You agree what would happen if a stranger approached them in the park. You'd agree what would happen, you know, if they're going out with their friends, they have to be home. You have to know where they're going. It's exactly the same approach. It's just in a digital environment.
That's a really good way of thinking about it. Carolyn, thank you so much. You've been amazing.
Oh, I could talk to you all day.
Thank you. And thank you for not making me sing. I am delighted about that.
Well, we're going to do it next time. I was going to say, can we do this every few months? Because I'm sure there's going to be things you need to update us on. And also, Wendy and I will just need regularly calming down, really, about things.
No. I mean, there's so many different topics you can deep dive into, whether it's gaming or social media, you know, or, gosh, so many.
Well, what I'm going to say is to all of our listeners, email us at NetMums. Our addresses are on the website, and tell us what you want us to ask Carolyn next time, because I'm sure you do have lots of burning questions, just like Wendy and I did. And we'll keep chatting as a regular thing, right, Carolyn?
Fantastic. I'd love to.
Amazing. Right, thank you so much. Go and enjoy your day and tell your boys we're really sorry we spoke about them behind the back for 45 minutes.
I will. All right, lovely to chat.
Bye.
Bye-bye.